Hello, everybody. Welcome to Season Ticket. I'm Chris Gasper. It's Wednesday, November 29th. We have a great show for you guys today. We're going to talk about Bill Belichick and how he deals with the media and what that has to do with the Patriots' success over the last 17 seasons. There's nobody better to break this topic down with than Boston Globe sports editor Joe Sullivan. Joe, you have to deal with the Patriots a lot.
I do.
As a sports editor of the Globe. And from a media standpoint, I know that's not always easy. I think this is an interesting discussion, and I'll tell you why. You go back to Sunday, Mike Tomlin, the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, had some very interesting comments about the Patriots-Steelers game on December 17th, which all of us are looking forward to.
Man, I'm going to embrace the elephant in the room. It's going to be fireworks, but it's probably going to be part one, you know?
So you are looking ahead to that. I mean, are you watching those guys' scoreboards and seeing what they're
doing? I'm not. I just know because the guy at the gas station tells me, the lady at the supermarket tells me.
So that's something Belichick would never do, talk about a game that is 3 weeks away.
That would be like us talking about Friday's upcoming season ticket. We'd never do that either, Chris. You know, Belichick is the worst example of that, or the best example of that, I guess how you would say it, that he's never going to talk about something into the future. But NFL coaches as a group are guilty of this. So to see Tomlin to deviate from this, in the interview with Tony Dungy, I think it's obvious. Yes, it's a thing to talk about. And here's what gets me about this, Chris. All this talk about like the Patriots have to be so quiet and close to the vest about things. I want one person to tell me what football game or even what athletic contest was ever decided by what was said before it. It's never happened. And it drives me nuts that people think this is true. It has no effect on the result. It's how the players play in the game on a given Sunday in the NFL, let's say. And I only got to ask one NFL coach about this. It was Brad Childress, who coached the Vikings a while ago. It was at a sports editor's meeting. And I asked him that exact question. And he agreed with it. He didn't think any game had ever been decided by what was said before.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, what was his response? Was that?
Yeah.
Was it basically you're right?
Yes, exactly.
So that's
because I am, Chris.
Well, there's a couple of things when I look at this here, Joe. One, I think a lot of Patriots fans look at it and say, well, this is why the Patriots always beat the Steelers, because the Patriots don't really say anything and they're very guarded in what they say. And I would agree with you. I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think there are different ways to do it. If you ask me, what is the most overrated, overplayed part of the Patriots dynasty, which is incredible and amazing? And there are so many things you can look at and say, that is exemplary. I can't believe they're able to do that in this day and age in the NFL. But the most overrated part of it to me is how they deal with the media. Because Bill was the same way in Cleveland. He was tight-lipped. He was guarded. The players didn't say a lot. They made the playoffs one time. It's about Belichick's brilliance in game planning. It's about Brady's brilliance on the field. It's about the model they've set up for how to build a team. All of those tenets are why they're so good. In terms of the way they deal with the media, that's just something, in Bill's mind, it minimizes distractions, and there might be a small, small thing to that, but I don't think that they win games because they don't say anything and because they don't acknowledge the obvious. And to me here, Tomlin was just acknowledging the obvious, which is the Pittsburgh Steelers and any team in the AFC that ultimately wants to go to the Super Bowl has to go through the Patriots. They know that. The other teams know that. And I've talked to guys in the Patriots locker room, not about this specific game, but just in general, about, hey, you guys have a bullseye on your back. You're going to get everybody's best shot. And they'll admit that. They'll say, yeah, we know we have the bullseye on our back. We know we're going to get everybody's best shot, and we have to play our best. So when I look at this here, it was Tomlin just stating the obvious. If the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to get to the Super Bowl, they have to beat the Patriots. They have to beat them in the playoffs, and in order to give themselves the best chance to do that, they have to beat them in this regular season game. So I really didn't have a problem with Tomlin's comments.
No, it is. It's obvious. It's incredible that we're suffering over him, that we think it's something amazing when it's so obvious. The only, quickly trying to remember another coach who would speak like that was Rex Ryan.
Yes.
When he came to the Jets, he said, we got to go through the Patriots. That's who we have to beat. And everyone feels that that worked against him. It had nothing to do with his demise. He just needed better players.
Well, I think he needed a better quarterback.
Yeah,
I remember there was one guy in this room who was really bullish on Mark Sanchez.
At one time.
Once thought he was the new Tom Brady in the AFC East.
So, listeners, if you ever get involved with Gasper, he never lets anything go. So this is, and that's what that is. I made him do a story on that quarterback, and he's never forgotten it.
But you know what? I appreciate this, because that story that you made me do on Mark Sanchez being potentially the new face of the AFC East helped me develop a nickname for Sanchez that I still use to this day. and it's off the Mark Sanchez because he was such an inaccurate passer.
That's true.
So one of my favorites in Mark Sanchez because of that nickname. So again, I don't have an issue with this with Tomlin, but here's a counterpoint that I think people raise. And you mentioned Rex Ryan. Does it speak to some sort of disorganization or lack of organization when a coach speaks this way? Because people will look at Ryan and Pete Carroll and Tomlin and say that, okay, yeah, you guys are right. You know, comments don't decide football games, but it's not just about the comments. This is something that is emblematic of their overall organizational approach, which is they're not as focused on the details as the Patriots, and these teams are not as focused on the details as they should be. Do you buy that at all?
No, I don't buy any of this, Chris. You're never going to push me to that side of the argument. It's just, it's baloney. We should be able to discuss it freely. So Gronkowski, after the game, they tried to get him to talk about end zone celebrations.
Following the final touchdown of the game, it looked like Brandon Cooks appeared to hop on your back and ride you like a racehorse. How did that particular scene come about?
That was not planned or anything. And we got yelled at. We're not allowed to talk about celebrations. That's what we got told, but I kind of want to talk about it. But I kind of don't, because I'll get in trouble. So I don't know what to do. So it just happened on the spot. It wasn't planned. We'll just keep it there.
You think he's going to get in trouble? I mean, you know the Patriots as well as anyone. Will he get in trouble for even like walking up to that line after his post-game press conference on Sunday?
I don't think he'll get in trouble because he walked up to the line. He didn't cross it. But if he'd crossed it, maybe he would have gotten in trouble. Especially, you're talking about a performance on Sunday. The Patriots won by 18 points, but I think they all acknowledge, and Bill acknowledged, that was not as crisp a performance as they wanted. So if after a performance like that, you're talking about something as trivial as touchdown celebrations, yeah, Bill's going to let you know about it because he wants you focused on the details. And again, I think one of the things that makes Belichick great is that he thinks of everything and that he's trying to think four steps ahead. And so a lot of the time, the way he deals with the media is about that. The media is the one thing in Foxborough he can't control because the media members don't work for him.
Mm.
He has basically total control down there. You know, the players are under his control, the trainers, the front office staff, because he has final say on player personnel. Everything runs through Bill.
Except the deflation of footballs. Remember that.
He knows nothing about that. You had to bring that up.
Well, everyone says he has control, but when that happened, he had no control.
Well, the NFL did clear him in that. Wells report cleared the head coach and said that he had nothing to do with it. You might disagree, but just to be factual here on Season Ticket, he was cleared. And that
Chris is correct. Those are the facts, yes.
But the one thing, the media. So I think a lot of times his approach to the media has to do with trying to control something he can't control and trying to control it the best that he can.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that means sort of not acknowledging the obvious, or I think a lot of people will look at, he'll talk up opponents. Like he really talked up the Dolphins leading into that game. And this week he's talking up Tyrod Taylor, the reinstated quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, a couple of weeks after the Bills decided to bench Tyrod Taylor in favor of Nathan Peterman.
Yes, he always does that. And
he wants to control the narrative is my point.
So let me speak to this as an editor. A lot of times I feel we should ignore what he says because it's meaningless. And we know that he's not being, how can I say this, forthcoming. You know, I don't want to call them lies because he's just sort of misdirecting or not giving you the whole story.
Yeah, it's like talking. It's like Sarah Huckabee Sanders standing up there in the White House press room.
Great.
I mean, you have specific talking points you want to make to steer the narrative in the direction that you want it to go. I think Bill does a lot of the same things.
Yeah, so I don't even know if we should use a lot of Belichick quotes because they're not genuine and they are misleading.
You're a big proponent of us not using a particular Bill Belichick catchphrase.
Yes, I don't think we should. In fact, I banned it recently. It is what it is. It should not be used in the Globe. Means nothing. And as a journalist, we should always know that things aren't always as they appear to be. That's what's true.
That's a great point.
And things are never what they are necessarily. And as skeptical journalists, we should always think that way. And hey, the readers should think that way. You know, they shouldn't believe things on the face of it all the time. You want to know what else I can tell the listeners that I banned this week? Is what? When Belichick says, no one works harder than Chris Gasper.
Yeah, I mean, nobody works harder than Steve does.
Nobody works harder than Cam. Nobody's worked harder than Rob. Dion works really hard. Like, nobody works harder than Dion.
And we have to stop using that. He has never said someone works harder than anyone else? It's always no one works harder, and it's every guy. Like, there must be a 53-way tie for first for hard work at the Patriots. And it can't be true. That's what I'm talking about. It isn't what it is. It can't be true. There are some guys who work harder than others. And look, this is inside newspapering, whatever yes. you want to call it. And so Belichick works against what we try to do in a sense that we want to get the things that are genuine and real. And he'll stack the bricks up as quick as he can to stop us.
Sometimes he's very good, though. I mean, if you get him on a Friday when he's comfortable and the game plan's in, expounding upon football history, it can be really educational. And I speak to that as my experience as a beat writer. I loved asking him and talking to him about football things. If he wants to talk about the Paul Brown, Cleveland Browns in the 50s, in the old, you know, All-American Football League, he's great on that stuff. It's just what he's not great on is giving you information that's pertinent to the team, like injuries.
Yeah, and look, you're right. He is great on it, and I find that interesting as well.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we're going to be back with more with Joe Sullivan next. Stay with us. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. Back here with Joe Sullivan. And Joe, we know that Bill Belichick has his own set of rules with the media, but so does Boston Globe columnist Dan Shaughnessy. Now, you talked about the phrase, "it is what it is," being banned, but Dan used it today in his column.
So there are exceptions to every rule, Chris.
Oh, okay.
And that was very clever how Dan used it. So that one was allowed.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you were aware.
If you have a clever way of using it, I'll acquiesce.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. That gets us into something that Bill Belichick said on Sunday. He was asked a question by Karen Garigian, who's a longtime Patriots reporter. She happens to work for the Boston Herald. And was asked about late in that game when the Patriots were up by 18 points, pulling Tom Brady. Tom Brady took a lot of hits against the Miami Dolphins. He was hit 8 times. The game was in hand. Why not take him out? Bill was very dismissive towards Karen with this question, and here's what he had to say.
I mean, it's easy for you to sit there and say the game's out of hand. I mean, if you watch games in the National Football League, a lot can change in a hurry. So the only time I think the game's in hand is when they're not going to have enough possessions to get the number of points that they need.
And so Dan writes this column basically saying, hey, this isn't really fair to Karen. And we all know Karen. She's an upstanding reporter. I didn't really understand why Bill's response to that particular question required that level of condescension and vitriol.
Well, you're right. And we all have a lot of respect for Karen, and she deserves the respect. She's earned it. So I don't know why he decided not to give it to her. Well, where was his pat answer, we do what's best for the team? I mean, that would have sufficed, wouldn't it? And, you know, good for Karen for asking the question. Now, quick exit ramp here. I agree with Belichick. You know, this is like going back to Parcells. Players play. He doesn't have to take him out of the game. But it is a question that needs to be asked, because there are people who have the theory that he should have been taken out of the game, that somehow he's going to get hurt.
Yeah, because he's 40 years old. And I think a lot of people, Karen's a really smart reporter. I don't think she would have asked that question if the game hadn't gone the way it went. And what I mean by that is the Dolphins were getting a lot of hits on Brady, but it was also a very chippy game. And the Dolphins have a reputation as somewhat of a dirty team. They mm-hmm. have two players, Kiko Alonso and Ndamukong Suh, who have been fined a number of times for questionable hits.
We'll say
questionable hits
yes.
or questionable actions on the field. Before the game, Ndamukong Suh made it very clear, and not in a nefarious way, but just very clear, that their intention was to touch and hit Brady as much as they could. And Brady was saying that the Dolphins play to the echo of the whistle, which is his way of saying, if you know Tom, that, yeah, they hit me after the whistle.
Yeah.
You know, when you're saying echo
yeah.
or the whistle.
Yeah.
So I think that's why Karen asked that question. It wasn't some sort of judgment on Bill's coaching acumen. It was saying, hey, this specific game, this specific situation was the best thing for the team to get Brady out of there before a frustrated Dolphins team took a cheap shot. I thought that was a totally legitimate question.
It was, and asked politely and answered it in a condescending way, unfortunately. Look, he's rude to people. The other thing is, I really don't think readers, or in this case listeners, care how we're treated.
They don't. They just want the information.
Nor should they.
But they should care.
And I don't think it's that big a deal when a coach is rude.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, it does happen. It's not that big a deal. It really isn't.
And to tie it back to Mike Tomlin, again, I appreciate Tomlin's honesty in the situation, basically saying, look, yeah, we have to take care of business, but we all know what we have to do, and that's beat the Patriots. And Pittsburgh's been terrible at that. You know, the Patriots have won 5 of 6 against them and 4 in a row. Brady has like 18 touchdown passes and no interceptions the last 6 games against them. The Steelers know, and this goes back to training camp when Steelers defensive coordinator Keith Butler was saying, we have to adjust our defense. We're going to play a lot more man because it's the only way we can beat the Patriots. I think Patriots fans should look at this and take it as a badge of honor. The fact is, the Steelers have geared their entire season. They built their entire defense towards basically one game, December 17th, beating the Patriots, trying to get home field, and they'll have to do it again in the playoffs. And I think that that's the way you should look at it, instead of looking at it and saying, well, anytime any team does anything that's different from the Patriots, or that they are brutally honest, like, isn't this what we want in sports? This is the thing that bothers me sometimes, Joe. We always say, and not just media members, fans too, we always say we want athletes and coaches to be honest and genuine, and then when they are, we criticize them.
Yeah, we should never.
And that's
do
what's
that.
Happened here with Tom. He was honest and genuine, and he gets criticized for it as sort of being someone who has taken his eye off the ball.
Not by us, Chris. We're in favor of this, right? We're not going to
criticize. Not by the
Tom.
Two of us, but again, yeah. I think there are certainly media members around Boston who are criticizing Tomlin for making these comments and saying it's emblematic of a problem with the Steelers.
Yeah, and it's wrong. It's just wrong. And I'll just go back to how we started this discussion. Nothing that has been said before a game affected the actual outcome of a game. It's just baloney.
So, Joe, we talked about Tom Brady potentially not playing the end of a game, but one of his former backups, Jimmy Garoppolo, with the San Francisco 49ers, is going to start a game for the first time since he was traded from the Patriots. He will start on Sunday against the Chicago Bears. That means a lot to Garoppolo because he is from the Chicago area. Are you surprised it took this long for the 49ers after they dealt that second round pick to the Patriots to put Jimmy G in, give him a start?
I thought they were going to play him right after the bye, and then they didn't. And look, this team's not going anywhere. It seems to me they should have stuck him in there before that and get going with the Jimmy Garoppolo era.
Do you know what's sort of ironic? That, again, we were talking about protecting Brady. One of the reasons, part of the rationale given by the 49ers for not putting Garoppolo in is trying to protect him to make sure he doesn't get hurt. The 49ers are terrible. They have one win on the season. Their offensive line's not very good, but they're trying to protect him. They don't want Garoppolo to get hurt.
Chris, he's going to be their quarterback, we assume, for a long time. It's time to start playing him.
I totally agree with you, and I think the reason for that is that he doesn't know that offense. He has to learn it. And there's only so much you can learn in practice or in a film room or just by being in the playbook. And I almost said, you know, nose in the playbook. All the playbooks now are on iPads. Mm-hmm. So nose in the iPad, I guess. There's only so much you can learn. And he'll be able to learn more out on the field. Get him the 5 games of experience that are remaining here. And I think that will allow him to take more of a leap next year. Instead of next year being the first full speed action he sees for the 49ers in that offense, I think you're actually setting him back. You're actually setting him back if you do that.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. So let me ask you this question. Will he be good? Will he be successful?
I think he will be good. I don't know how good he'll be. I always tell this story about talking to him at the Super Bowl about playing scout team quarterback. I said, who's your favorite guy to play? And he said, Aaron Rodgers. I feel like there's a lot of similarities to our game.
Oh, they do.
So that's who he looks at. You know, do I think he'll be Aaron Rodgers? No, but I think he could be a very, very good NFL quarterback. No.
Well, if he anything close to Aaron Rodgers, the 49ers would have made a great deal.
Yeah, that's true. For just a second-round pick, you always wonder if the Patriots could have gotten more there. But I think a lot of Patriots fans will be interested on Sunday to see how Jimmy Garoppolo does in his first start with the San Francisco 49ers. Well, Joe, this was a lot of fun. I always enjoy talking to you.
I enjoy talking to you too, Chris.
This is good. This is sort of what it's like around the office when you're not yelling at me. All right, you can find Joe Sullivan on Twitter. His handle is at Globe Sullivan. Joe, thanks once again.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Finally, the cheap seats. The New York Giants season is going nowhere, but quarterback Eli Manning is now going somewhere, the bench, and probably to a new team next season. The 2-9 Giants showed their clumsiness and cluelessness extends to execution off the field when they announced on Tuesday that Geno Smith was going to start this week against the Oakland Raiders instead of Manning. Manning had started 210 consecutive games at quarterback for the Giants. That was the second longest streak in NFL history, trailing only Brett Favre's 297 consecutive games started. Manning has started every game for the Giants since November 21st, 2004. The Giants told Manning he could keep starting. He would start the first halves of games to keep the streak intact, but then he would have to come out in the second half in favor of rookie Davis Webb or Smith. Manning did what he does well. He passed. He refused to give the Giants PR cover for their disingenuous charade.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't think that's, hey, you started knowing you're going to come out of a game. you know, to keep a streak alive, maybe. That's not what it's about, you know. It's not how you play. You know, you play to win.
Look, Patriots fans aren't sad to see Manning sit down in such an unceremonious fashion. He twice dashed the Super Bowl hopes of the Patriots, defeating them with fourth quarter drives in Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46. Despite the two Super Bowl rings, Manning isn't his brother Peyton. He's led the league in interceptions three times in his career, including 2007, when he ended the Patriots' perfect season with an upset in the Super Bowl. But he's still by far the Giants' best QB, and Manning deserved better. This is just proof the Giants botched yet another handoff this season. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Be sure to tell a friend about the show, and if you like us, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.